Welcome to the Aporia podcast. Remember, you can listen to this podcast on all the major platforms. If you like the show, you'll love the Aporia magazine. Find the link in the show notes, along with our Twitter and a link to the bonus questions we ask our guests.
Hey, welcome to the Aporia podcast. I'm your host, Diana Fleischman. Today, our guest is Randy Thornhill, who is a distinguished professor emeritus in biology at the University of New Mexico. He's my colleague and my friend, and he's been my colleague for a long time. He was the president of HBES for a couple years. Randy's been cited nearly 40,000 times, published 4 books and 250 papers on a lot of topics that are central to evolutionary psychology. So things that you might know about, like attractiveness, symmetry, ovulation, the effects of pathogens on human psychology. Evolutionary psychology is known as a really controversial field, but Randy has published potentially one of the most controversial books in our very controversial field, which was called A Natural History of Rape. And in the last several years, he's been working on a really big picture theory called the Parasite Stress Theory of Values and Sociality. Thanks for joining us, Randy.
Great, Diana. Nice to be here. Talk to you again. We get to talk a lot.
Talk a lot. Randy hangs out with my babies and comes over for pizza and stuff. Yeah. You got your start working on insects, Randy. Tell me a little bit about how you went from publishing a book on insect mating systems and to working on humans.
Yeah. So in the 70s, there was 1970s, there was the rise of an 80s, a field called behavioral ecology, which was really an emphasis of the connection between modern evolutionary theory and animal behavior, including human behavior. That arose then, and I was very much interested in that and hooked up with a very fine scholar, John Alcock, and we did a synthetic piece, a book on the evolution of insect mating systems, very diverse mating systems across the insects, and we showed that we could pull it all together with modern evolutionary theory. And that book is recognized as a foundational document in the rise of behavioral ecology. So I'm very proud of that work. And I continued work on insects, sexual selection processes, and so forth in insects for many years. And all the way into the 90s, really, and more recently than that, working with some Chinese colleagues on some issues in insect mating and sexual selection and so forth. And then I got into humans basically through fluctuating asymmetry, and I discovered the role of symmetry in sexual selection in insects first, and then wondered about how all that, did a lot of research there, and then wondered how that would apply to Homo sapiens, basically developmental health is what it is, bilateral symmetry, fluctuating asymmetry, deviations, and a guy, a colleague of mine, Danish biologist Anders Müller, simultaneously discovered the role of fluctuating asymmetry, bilateral symmetry in birds. And we independently did this, I on insects and Anders and birds, and we hooked up and showed the pretty general principles that drives mating success, attractiveness to the opposite sex, competition for mates and so forth, is very much tied to developmental health measured as bilateral symmetry. So then I wondered about humans, and I hooked up with a guy, Carl Grommer, University of Vienna, brilliant evolutionary biologist. And we started working on human facial symmetry and showed that facial symmetry is correlated with attractiveness. And then hooked up with another guy, Steve Gangstad, locally here in at the University of New Mexico, brilliant psychologist, and we continued work on symmetry and showed in humans and showed that it was very much important in understanding lots of aspects of the human mating system, not just attractiveness to the opposite sex, but infidelity patterns of the sexes. Female orgasm is tied to the symmetry of her copulatory partner and so forth. We did those kinds of studies in humans, and that set off that whole symmetry thing in biology, including psychology, was a really research revolution.
Were you the originator of the symmetry stuff?
Do what?
Did you originate the stuff on symmetry? Was that you?
Yeah, I've discovered the role of bilateral symmetry in insects first. This was a study of scorpion flies that I did in Japan and in Germany, showing that symmetric males are more attractive to females, and that symmetric males and females are more competitive for resources and competition for mates and so forth. And that was the same time that Moeller was studying barn swallows, barn swallow tails. And the symmetry of the barn swallow tails is attractive to females. So we published independently, Moeller and I on insects and he on barn swallows. And that was early 90s. And then biologists took it up very quickly, applying those ideas to their favorite species. And within 5 years, there were 70 species in which
symmetry stuff. Yeah. So just in case people don't know, the symmetry stuff is organisms, they are intending to become symmetrical. Genetically, they intend to become symmetrical, but certain environmental insults, things like parasites, make them not symmetrical. And so symmetry ends up being a proxy for good things like immunological competence, right?
So it's a fitness, a major fitness component. That's what we discovered. It was not known to be a fitness component prior to Moeller and I. And
one question is are female sensitivity to symmetry itself? Or do you know, like with scorpion flies, what is it specifically that the females are using for as a proxy for symmetry? Do you think that they can actually perceive the symmetry of the males?
I don't know that in scorpion flies. It is true that female barn swallows do. Through the experiments that Anders did with the tails, it's symmetry per se that the females are processing with the brains. In scorpion flies, what I do know is that the symmetric males smell better to females, and I think that has to do with just like health is smellable in lots of species. I think it's that, and so that's what we know. Yeah, and there could be visual too. I mean, the wings. The wings of males, you can measure them, you know, it's a bilateral trait, measure the wings, and the more symmetric the wings are, the more attractive those males are to females. So there could be a visual perception element to that too, but that hasn't been demonstrated in the scorpion flies.
Okay, great. So are scorpion flies endemic to Japan? Why did you start working on scorpion flies?
Scorpion flies, well, let's see. That's a very interesting story in terms of background. When I was a kid, I happened to run into a scorpion fly. Actually, it's a hanging fly. It's a different family than scorpion flies, but the same as a
To listen to the full podcast, become a subscriber at aporiamagazine.com.